Seekers, Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome to the program. Thanks for shifting your attention a little bit from the more important things to join us on the program. In our second hour tonight, we'll be joined by a congressional candidate from, I believe, the 9th Congressional District in North Carolina. I think that's right. Harry Taylor. You might remember him as the man who stood up to Bush on Iraq back in 2006 at a North Carolina town hall meeting. Remember that? And asked him if he didn't feel ashamed of himself. Remember that guy? He's going to be on the program tonight. He's running in the 9th district in North Carolina. And we'll chat with him for a few minutes next hour. Also, a program note, we're off tomorrow night. Special guest host, Harrison on the Edge. Really? Is it Harrison going to do it? Oh, God. If you've never heard Harrison on the Edge, fasten your seatbelt. I'm telling you, you're in for a real treat. We'll be back live Monday on MLK Day, in case you're wondering. We'll be back. We have plans for tomorrow night, I guess is the way to put it. All right. Also, for those of you who have been going to the MikeMalloy.com website for a long time, thank you very much. I think since we started with Air America, we've gotten about 2.5 million hits. And, of course, that lasted 2 years. Now we've been with Nova M for about a year and a half. 2.5 million hits isn't bad. I mean, it's all right. But the website is, it was okay when Mark put it together for us, but it is not okay any longer and hasn't been okay for a long time. Billy Foster at Nova M has just about got the new site together. So we expect that pretty soon, and we will be joining the 21st century with that new website. So if you're going to MikeMalloy.com, by the way, that picture of me there is about 20-some years old. I don't look like that anymore. I don't look like that anymore at all. But, okay, is that all the business? Can we get on the program now? Okay, good. What else we got? You know who Andrea Mitchell's husband is. She is the, she's one of the reporters, longtime reporter at NBC News. NBC. The, you know, the big cheese, NBC. Occasionally she deigns to go on MSNBC when she feels like slumming it a bit, to her. But NBC is Andrea Mitchell's roost. And her husband, of course, is Alan Greenspan. Well, there was an announcement today. Greenspan has been hired by a hedge fund the announcement was made 2 days ago. Greenspan has been hired by a hedge fund that made billions shorting the subprime mortgage market. Now, there was such a thing as the subprime mortgage market thanks to Alan Greenspan. When this started, any fool, I can remember sitting around with friends about 7, 8, 9 years ago talking about what are these adjustable rate mortgages? What is this? Letting people fill out applications for a mortgage with no verification whatsoever, no money down whatsoever. What are these interest-only loans? What is this? And the conclusion, because I have friends here in Atlanta who are in real estate, the conclusion was that this was an absolute, monumental, inescapable financial disaster that was being built. Especially under the Bush administration. And we kind of watched this over the past 5, 6, 7 years as home prices here in the Metro Atlanta area doubled for no reason, none whatsoever. The houses didn't get twice as big. There wasn't twice as much demand. It was simply the speculation in the housing industry that, well, the prices are just going to go up forever. They're just going to keep going up. A house you could buy for $150,000 10 years ago will soon be worth a million. In some instances, that's exactly what happened. Total insanity. Well, it could have been stopped by Alan Greenspan at any time. It could have been stopped by any one of two or three different Bush crime family organizations within the federal government. But it wasn't. It was promoted. This is how the economy has just roared along for the past 5 years. Everybody sucking equity, false equity out of their houses. It translated into real money, absolutely, so that we Americans could go buy more things. The net result, among the net results, is our savings rate in this country now is a minus figure. We are on the brink. I hate to start the program, bad news, and it's not something you don't already know if you're paying attention. We're on the brink here of what a lot of economists are calling a recession, and a few psychopathic, mad, dribbling, obviously, liberal or progressive economists are saying it's going to be the worst downturn since the Great Depression back in the 20s and 30s. Now, you pay your money and takes you, you know, places your bet. You do whatever you want to do. But the architect behind this insanity was Alan Greenspan, Andrea Mitchell's husband. And he has been hired. He has been hired to go to work for a hedge fund that made billions of dollars, billions of dollars shorting the subprime crisis that he, Alan Greenspan, created. Reported at economicsbriefing.com, here's this couple of sentences here. Do you sometimes get the sense there is a financial elite who can even screw up the entire housing market and still land on their feet? Shakespeare didn't even write plays with scenes equal to the depraved twists and turns of those running the nation's printing presses, who can then rush to cash checks from anyone that benefited in any way from the money printing. Et tu, Brute? Will never match. They hired Alan Greenspan? Anyway, the hedge fund manager, John Paulson, announced a couple of days ago that Alan Greenspan, this is kind of the payoff. You don't make a lot of money when you're chairman of the Fed. You make a lot of connections when you're chairman of the Fed, and he was there for a long time. Now, during the Bush 1 years and in the Clinton years, Greenspan was kind of subdued, kind of held in check, especially during the Clinton years when there was a booming economy. But remember when Bush took over and immediately started his slash-and-burn policies, what did Greenspan do? I think the federal interest rate at the time, the Federal Reserve interest rate at the time, was something like 4.5%, 5.5%, 6%, something like that, maybe 5%. And little by little, Greenspan was forced to reduce that interest rate, first by a quarter of a point, then by half points, then quarter points, half points, all the way down. Remember when the overnight rate that banks charge each other, thanks to the Federal Reserve, was 1%, in order to shore up Bush's phony, fake-ass economy. Now, with so many financial markets just absolutely poised right on the brink of the commode, waiting for China or Kuwait or somebody to flush, Alan Greenspan gets hired by a hedge fund manager who made billions. Can you, on Alan Greenspan's Ponzi scheme, can you imagine how much money Andrea Mitchell, NBC's Andrea Mitchell's husband, is now going to make? This is how it works on that level. This is how it works. It's just like John Ashcroft, the psychopathic religious nutcase who headed the Justice Department and now runs a lobbying firm that just signed contracts making tens of millions of dollars lobbying the Justice Department. That's the way it works in Bush world. Ah! Now, when you couple that with a decision made by the conservative majority on the Supreme Court earlier this week that class action lawsuits against companies that work Ponzi schemes and screw investors, those class action lawsuits are unconstitutional and therefore you can't do that anymore. Couple that with Andrea Mitchell's husband being hired by a hedge fund, and you've got a very, very interesting ride coming for the U.S. economy. I want to talk a little bit about the what the judges ruled the other day. Stay with me. We usually don't talk about economics, do we? We're really not tonight. What we're talking about tonight is crime. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
If you're paying taxes, you're going to have tax relief. The government ought not to pay favorites. Seems to make a fair way to me to make policy.
What? Oh, my God. Oh, and don't be fooled about this collaborative effort that's going on right now between Republicans and Democrats to stave off this train wreck, economic train wreck that we're all facing. The Republicans, the boner guy from Ohio, the House Minority Leader, what's his first name? John Boehner. He, of course, is he's got the answer, and that is to make Bush's tax cuts for the top 0.1% in this country, make those the wealthy people, make their tax cuts permanent, and that's going to solve everything. Jesus, I hate these people. I just hate them so much that sometimes I throw up a little bit in the back of my throat. Anyway, there's not going to be a compromise. There will not be. What will happen is Republicans will get what they want, and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi will just lay down on the floor, and their eyes will glaze over, and they'll say, oh, yeah. Robert Borisage, writing at OurFuture.org, his blog there, the other day, he asked the question, if you remember the Enron employees who watched their retirement savings evaporate, as a result of what Bush's best buddy Kenny Boy Lay did over at Enron, the Ponzi scheme, and all the people who were just murderized by that, kind of like the savings and loan debacle that was run by the Bush crime family back in the 80s. But anyway, the Supreme Court, the conservative majority on the Supreme Court, the other day told all of them to drop dead. Go screw yourselves. You see, the Supreme Court had a case that really got down to forced to choose between protecting the rights of the small investors who got defrauded versus the companies, banks, accountants, and vendors who conspired in creating and who profited from the fraud. So what did the court do? Obviously, the court protected the crooks. Not the common man? The average investor? Get real. Now, as Borisage points out, that was the entire point of stacking the court with right-wing activist judges. We were all told, of course, by mainstream media and the freaks and jackasses in the society that the contest was over Roe v. Wade and civil rights. That if we allowed these judges, I'm talking about Roberts and Alito and the rest, if we allowed these judges to be confirmed, well, there goes Roe v. Wade. Well, there goes civil rights. Well, there goes this. Well, there goes that. Bat squeeze. The intent all along was to choose judges who would protect corporate interests and presidential prerogatives. Proof? Roe v. Wade is still standing. But consumers and workers and small investors are taking it in the nether region of our bodies, right? Just wham! Ooh, damn, that hurt. Yeah? How about this? Wham! Ooh, boy, that hurt even worse. The conservative majority's decision the other day held that companies that conspired to help a company like Stone Ridge Investment Partners report fraudulent profits. That was one of the companies involved, Stone Ridge Investment Partners. That companies like that could not be held liable to the investors who got screwed. unless the co-conspirators, that would be Stone Ridge Investment Partners and anybody else, the accountants, the liars, the thieves, unless those co-conspirators actually communicated with the investors directly, investors could not be said to have been misled by them. Do you understand that? So let's supposing let's supposing Ford Motor Company is really a stock, and Ford Motor Company is really a Ponzi scheme. If you go to your broker and buy a share of Ford Motor stock, and then find out that there's no such thing as a Ford Motor Company, you can't sue the people who just screwed you. You can't sue the company that sold you the stock. You can't sue a Ford Motor Company. You can't sue the accountants who made up the phony balance sheets. You can't sue anybody, according to the conservative, neo-fascist, corporatist George Bush Supreme Court. What has happened here is they have allowed fraud to become a profit center for Wall Street banks. Think about that for a second. So with all the whining going on, as these investment houses go all around the world, hat in hand, give me some money, and they're getting it. Now the real clowns are saying, well, this is proof that China and Indonesia and Singapore and Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates have faith in America. That's why they're pumping tens of billion dollars into these half-assed run investment houses and banking firms that are screwing the American public royally. No, they don't have any faith. They just want a piece of the action. They can smell massive, massive fraud when it presents itself. What is the American economy? What is our gross domestic product? I know it's not called that anymore, but what is it? $10 trillion a year, 8, 10, 30, I don't even know. But it's enormous. It's still enormous. It's all smoke and mirrors, but so what? So all this money that's being pumped into these investment houses that have ripped and sludged and beat the living Christ out of every single American, including the unborn who are going to have to pay for this, the only reason these foreign governments are getting involved is because it's like, whoa, step right up, free lunch, free dinner, free supper, free breakfast, everything's free. Come on, and now we got the Supreme Court on our side.
We need you, Ken Starr.
Kenny Boy should invoke his fifth dimension rights.
Bush and Cheney's and long money buddies. This time they went too far.
What is Enron anyway?
Remember back when they kept whining about Clinton lowered the moral bar. Where are you now that we need you?
God, I mean it all. Potrei buscare dinero, gana dinero, potrei buscare dinero.
We're capable of being wise about the money.
Un hombre insincero, de una familia muy rica. Bush es un hombre insincero. Una familia muy rica. Antes de que usted vota,
26 before the hour. So the to kind of close that off, that first segment rant on the part of your humble and obedient servant here, the conservatives on the Supreme Court, as Robert Borisov writes, has just defined that free markets mean free for fraud. You just can't win, can you, huh? You just can't win. Unless you're in a position where you can ride out the stock market crash that we're seeing right now, if you have money invested there, or if you had money invested in real estate, or if you had money invested in God what? I mean, it just keeps going. Unless you had oil stocks, then you're doing just fine, aren't you? And just a couple more sentences here. The Economist today said sighs of relief were audible in boardrooms across America this week at the Supreme Court's long-awaited decision in Stone Ridge Investment Partners versus Scientific Atlanta. At issue were the circumstances in which a company can be sued for what is called scheme liability. On January 15th, the court ruled that a firm could not be held liable for securities fraud merely because it was a business partner of a company that committed the fraud. Robert Monks, a corporate governance activist, had predicted that if the courts ruled this way, it would further reduce the accountability of American business to shareholders. That sentence bears repeating. If the court ruled this way, the way it did, it will further reduce the accountability of American business to shareholders. Wow. In the past couple of years, The Economist writes, the Supreme Court has made several rulings favoring corporate defendants over shareholders. One immediate casualty of the Stone Ridge ruling is likely to be a $40 billion class action suit against the financial service firms that advised Enron. It is also likely to make it harder to bring successful lawsuits against Wall Street advisors and ratings agencies over the subprime mortgage meltdown. So that ruling earlier this week was extremely important because what is happening in the subprime so-called mortgage industry is just out-and-out theft. These sons of bitches might as well have held guns to people's heads. And don't send me an email that says, well, Mike, what about the stupid people that took advantage of those subprime loans? Oh, please. Please. Who invented this nonsense? Who came up with this? How many times have you turned on your television in the past 7 or 8 years and have seen these commercials that are pushing this stuff? It's just like selling bad heroin on the street corner someplace here in Atlanta or any place. This is what hedge fund managers, this is what investment houses and banking houses do now. It is, and the Supreme Court has made it legal. Fraud, theft, lying, jiggering the books, deception. Hey, if they can get away with it, they've gotten away with it. Unbelievable. This comes from Paul, who writes, okay, so yesterday Huckabee spoke about changing the Constitution to reflect the Bible. And today there's an audio from NBC where he spoke on a morning show about frying squirrels, or when he was in college using a popcorn popper to cook up his squirrels to eat. What is wrong with these Republicans? What's their fascination with rodents and restroom stalls? Or little boys, or taking money from defense contractors. The list goes on and on and on and on, and yet the mainstream media pays very little attention to it. Then there's this Republican congressman who's just been indicted on 42 counts of terrorism. The emailer says, I forget the actual term, but terrorism charges. He was paid by a terrorist organization to funnel hundreds of thousands of dollars to Al-Qaeda. What is wrong with these sick bastards? Is this Republican congressman on his way to Guantanamo for some torture, some waterboarding? I mean, really, a terrorist supporter in the Republican Party? According to some of you conservative Republicans, you vote for Democrats. If you vote for Democrats, you're supporting the terrorists, yet it's your people who are doing it. Look at the long line of Republicans who have been indicted or have stepped down because of embarrassing situations, or like the Larry Craig's deal, or Mr. Foley, or all of that stuff. Corruption, bribery, and molesting little children. See, here's the thing, Paul writes. You all want to say that mainstream media is liberal. It's not. It's corporatist controlled. And we all know who corporate America's friends are, not liberals. And it's simply not the case because if you're not hearing about any of it on the mainstream media, if this were John Kerry or Hillary or Obama or John Edwards or anyone else, this would be splashed across front page news around the country. It would be the talk of every conservative talk show host, and mainstream media would be spending the first half hour breaking it down, playing audio clips, and interviewing people about how they feel about it. Try to find a major newspaper or media outlet that's covering any of this. Paul. Well, Paul, don't get your bloomers in a wad so much. You know, we're finding out that Hillary Clinton is a racist and Barack Obama is a drug user and or was a drug user, you know. We're finding out that John Edwards lied about his haircut, the price of his haircut. So this other stuff is it's really not necessary to know. It's just going to corrupt, you know, just going to corrupt your head. And the newest Huckabee thing, good God, I blogged about it, my little mini blog that I do every day at MikeMulley.com, and then it's at NovaMRadio.com. But Huckabee was interviewed by one of these Christian fanatic organizations. I guess, I've never heard of them. I'm guessing it's a Christian fanatic. Maybe not. Maybe it's a liberal Christian website, but it's BeliefNet.com. And the questioner said, regarding Huckabee's comment the other day, the questioner said, is it your goal to bring the Constitution into strict conformity with the Bible? Some people would consider that a kind of dangerous undertaking, particularly given the variety of biblical interpretations. So Huckabee answers this way, and I've condensed it a bit. He says, well, I don't think that's a radical view to say that we're going to affirm marriage. I think the radical view is to say that we're going to change the definition of marriage so it can mean two men or two women or a man and an animal. Yeah, it's that old man and animal riff that religious conservative nutballs just can't seem to get out of their anti-homosexual rants. Remember Rick Santorum? Remember the corpse-fondling former senator from Pennsylvania, the freak who insisted man-to-man sex was a short, lubricated slide away from man-on-animal sex? Remember that? Okay, the corpse was his and his wife's own miscarried fetus, so I guess the charge of corpse handling doesn't count, right? But I meant what I put at my mini-blog. I wrote, I so fervently, devoutly, prayerfully wish these psychotic sons of bitches would just go away. Huckabee. Really, rapture on out. Self-terminate, Reverend. Give God a bit of assistance, boys. He's a busy deity these days, what with Armageddon just around the next oil rig. Here. You can even borrow one of my guns. Unbelievable. What is it with these Republican conservatives and their preoccupation with sex? With weird sex, you know, animals and illegal sex, like with children. And why is it that they insist that marriage, which has nothing whatsoever to do with religion, it has to do with the state. Religion superimposed itself, but there's not, I've said this before, there's not a religious nutcase in America, I don't care what religion he or she subscribes to, who doesn't finish up the wedding vows by saying, now by the power vested in me by the state of Georgia or by the state of New York. See, the power flows from the state, not from God, not from Allah, not from Yahweh. It comes from the state. So, what is with these sick bastards that they feel that two men or two women, if they want to make a marriage commitment, shouldn't be allowed to? Where does it say in the Bible that two people of the same gender shouldn't get married? Wait, will somebody find that for me and send me the biblical quotation? I'd love to see it. Oy. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Your brother's keeper just don't apply, 'cause it's everybody for himself. Jesus came in glory, and in glory he shall return. The preacher said, in God we trust, ye Democrats shall burn. No butterflies, no hanging chads can save them in the end. Jesus was Republican, thank God.
10 before the hour. Sharon writes, don't forget what Don Henley said. A man with a briefcase can steal more money than any man with a gun. Yeah, that's very, very true. Coming up after the next break, we're going to be joined by Harry Taylor. He is running for the seat now held by Sue Myrick in North Carolina's 9th Congressional District. We're going to talk with Harry Taylor for a while. He's the man who stood up at a town hall meeting in April of 2006 and asked George Bush about, warrantless wiretapping and the torture, and asked that the president express some manner of shame for his actions. And Bush, of course, refused to do so. And we all know why now, because Bush's psychopathology is such that it's impossible for him to show shame or talk about it or contrition or doubt, because he deals directly with God. One last email here. You guys just write such good emails. I like to share them with you, with the listeners. This is from Pab. He writes about Huckabee and the subjugation of women. Pab writes, there's a book on my bookshelf that I take down and read every 4 years when I start getting the, what the hell does it matter, thoughts invading my brain as I watch our political system degrade into bad reality television. It's Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. If any of your listeners have not read it, they should go out and find a copy and read it right now. The story takes place in the near future after declining birth rates lead Christian Reconstructionists to stage a, quote, terrorist action, end quote, allowing them to seize control of the government and take steps to reverse the trend through brainwashing and the outright slavery of fertile women. It's not that far off from what people like Commander Bunnypants in the White House and Reverend Huckabee, let's call him by his proper title, shall we, Reverend Huckabee, are trying to do with these so-called human life initiatives and calling for constitutional amendments. The book was written in the late 1980s, and after I read it the first time, I dismissed it as alarmist. But when 9/11 happened, the first thing that went through my brain was, this is what Margaret Atwood was talking about. This is how the Christian Reconstructionist takeover starts. Since then, I've read the book several times, at least once every election cycle, just to remind myself of what they have in store for people. Even though the drive to end abortion would have no direct effect on me as a gay man, I can't sit idly by and watch it happen because I know I'm also a target. Every little bit of power they grab gives them confidence and the drive to fight for more. You cannot appease them. Give them an inch, they'll take a yard. Give them a yard, they'll take your front yard. We have to draw a line in the sand and stop this push for fascism in Jesus' name now, before it gains any more acceptance. Back in 1990, I was visiting Toronto and saw a theater advertising the movie version of The Handmaid's Tale. On its marquee was the phrase, "See it now before it's banned," on one side, and on the other side it said, "See it now before it really happens." In response, 18 years later, I warned people, read the book now, it's already happening. See you at the fourth box. Pab. In New Jersey. And he's also a founding member of Nova M. You folks write emails that just can't be ignored. I can't do it. And The Handmaid's Tale, yes, is stunning. What else have we got? After we talk with Harry Taylor for a while, I have a critique of Bush's trip to the Middle East and some of the pronouncements he made there, courtesy of Paul Craig Roberts at antiwar.com, that you need to hear.
Pronouncements or mispronunciations? Because there were both.
Well, both, yeah. You know, pronouncements. He thinks what he says are pronouncements, when in fact it's psychopathic garbage. But who's going to tell him? Who's going to tell him? Who's going to step up to him? I mean, the closest we can come, probably, and not be waterboarded, is what Harry Taylor did. Just ask him if he could in some manner express some shame for some of his actions. And, of course, that's totally off the table. The picture of Harry Taylor that played through media in this country, where he's standing at that town hall meeting at Central Piedmont Community College back in 2006, that picture was very reminiscent, and we all know this because there were comparisons made, but it was very reminiscent of Norman Rockwell's painting of the freedom of speech. Rockwell decided to do a painting of, was it Roosevelt's Four Freedoms? FDR's Four Freedoms that he talked about during one of the campaigns. And freedom of speech was one of the foundational Four Freedoms in this country. So the picture of Harry Taylor standing there with a microphone in his hand in that auditorium with people sitting as he's standing was uncannily reminiscent of Norman Rockwell's painting done, what, 75, 80 years ago? Okay, maybe not that long ago. I guess it was back in the late 40s, early 50s, but it depicted a moment from all those years ago. And if you juxtapose those to the photograph of Harry Taylor and the painting by Norman Rockwell, I mean, the expressions on Rockwell's man standing there and Harry Taylor's face are... Harry Taylor could have been a model for that painting, even though it preceded Harry Taylor probably before he was born. Anyway, we're going to talk with him when we come back, so stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on the Nova M Radio Network. Just to reiterate here for a second about Harry Taylor, at his website, which is, what is it, Kathy? HarryTaylorForCongress.org? Is that the website? .com? Harry Taylor, we'll find out in a minute because we'll have him on. He is an outspoken critic of the Bush administration. And as you know, at Central Piedmont Community College in April of 06, Mr. Taylor took the microphone and asked the George W. Bush to express some manner of shame for his actions regarding warrantless wiretapping and treatment of enemy combatants and torture and so on and so forth. And, of course, Bush, being Bush, refused to do so. Harry Taylor is now running for the North Carolina's 9th Congressional District seat, now occupied by Sue Myrick, who, if I remember, is pretty much a Bush clone, does exactly what the Republican Party and George Bush tells her to do. A little bio on Harry. He's given generously of his time and energy to organizations like Big Brothers, Habitat for Humanity, Outward Bound, Sierra Club, the Charlotte Folk Society. He's a folk musician in addition to being an incipient politician. He has helped to develop hope, self-esteem, and courage in disadvantaged youth. That's been one of his lifetime pursuits. And he also has an advocacy for a clean, safe planet for the young people to inherit. Joining us now from North Carolina is Harry Taylor. Harry, I don't know how much of that you heard. I was just reading a couple of items from your website about who you are. And
I heard it all, Mike. Thank you.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes, I did. Thanks.
And the part that, other than the degree from Colgate University, what gets my attention is here is you are an old-time folk musician.
I am. I play banjo and fiddle and mandolin. And
dobro? And
I don't play dobro.
You don't?
No.
Are you in a group?
I play with a lot of different people, and I play publicly a lot, but I play with different people under different circumstances.
I love that kind of music.
So do I.
I really do. Oddly enough, I only love it when I hear it live. I don't know why that is.
I understand that.
Harry, I've got to ask you, what prompted your question? And I know you've been asked this 7,432 times. What prompted your question when Bush was there? That the shot heard around the world, so to speak. What prompted the question?
Well, I had been really angry with him since almost day one. I was well aware from Sierra Club that he had a horrible environmental record when he came to the White House from Texas, and so I just kind of had my guard up anyhow. And when he started his damn war, my anger boiled over.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know, I didn't think there's ever would be a chance to speak with him, but the Monday of that week, that it was on a Thursday, and that Monday I got an email from the Charlotte World Affairs Council, an organization to which I belong, saying that he was going to be there and everybody was going to be able to get in. I didn't think they'd let me in because I'd been very active, but they did. And I was still mad, angry with him for starting that war.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted a chance to say something to him. And in fact, I did not ask him a question. I made some statements. And I didn't ask him a question because all I wanted to do was say, you know, you ought to be ashamed of yourself
mm-hmm.
for all the troubles that you've caused. And that essentially was what I said, but I didn't say it that way. I said, I would hope that from time to time you have the humility and humility and something else to be ashamed of yourself. So I didn't even say that to him. And I just left it, so hoping that he wouldn't be able to, he'd have to stop and think about what I said. You know, he'd be waiting for a question, waiting and waiting and waiting, and it never came. And so I got done, and he started talking about wiretapping.
Mm-hmm. It was an excellent way to address that issue, especially now that we know, and we may have known in April of 2006 about Bush's psychopathology, that when confronted, like so many people that have his sort of mental condition, when confronted with direct evidence that would cause shame in other people, a person like Bush is simply incapable. And as a result of that, without getting too Freudian here, as a result of that, his actions are just utterly, from top to bottom, totally, completely, without exception, destructive. No matter what he undertakes, it will wind up in a destructive mode. What made you decide to run for the 9th district in North Carolina?
I believe that this country and this world can do a lot better than it does. I think there's a place for everybody, and I think that there's enough resources if we could have people who would lead from places of selflessness and compassion and interest and creativity. I know we can do a heck of a lot better than we do, and the leaders that we have in this country so often are people that are out for themselves and out for a political party or for a particular narrow interest, and the world can't keep running like that. It's gonna crash headlong into something. And I've never had becoming a politician or running for office on my wish list, and it's nothing that I ever thought I would do. But I look around and I think, well, maybe based on what the notoriety that I got, I found out how many millions of people stood behind me and want change of some sort and want a different kind of leader in places like this. And we have one. I heard you talking about Sue Myrick a minute ago, and yeah, she's a rubber stamp for George Bush, and prior to that for Newt Gingrich. Mm-hmm. She's there, and her place is maintained for her in order to get her vote again and again and again. And I look at her, and I think she's as much a part of the Bush presidency as he is. She's one of those people who's made it happen. And I think it's time for her to go home, come back here to Charlotte, and go learn how to play golf or something, or play the banjo or something.
Even though I went to NC State and lived in Raleigh back in the early 70s, I'm not familiar with the 9th Congressional District, but what the boundaries are. But I do know that Charlotte is relatively conservative town. What is your campaign strategy where it concerns Ms. Myrick?
Well, first of all, I got to get past the primary. There is another candidate that I have to run against. That's on the 6th of May, and we got to get past that. But I think after that point, to find those people who have voted Democratic in the past, and in all likelihood, without just showing up, I should end up with 32 to 33% of the vote. That means that we're looking for half of the other third. And we'd have to go out to all the people that are Democrats and independents and a lot of Republicans who are really disgruntled and really angry with Bush, and see if we can't, and I can't convince them that we are far more alike than we are different. And these issues that become so incendiary are fought out on the edges of the political spectrum, and most of the rest of us want the same things in the middle. And there's no big difference between what most of us want, and I've got to figure out how to get to those people, talk to them, and appeal to them. Do you
think that's still true, Harry? That there's very little difference between the basic goals or needs or wants of Democrats and Republicans? And the reason I ask the question is, I'm going to take a break before we get an answer from
you. Okay.
If you don't mind holding on.
Sure.
The reason I question that, it's based on my own experience and my experience being a talk show host. I get the sense that most Americans have become so polarized, and even without the polarization, Democrats are and progressives and liberals are absolutely convinced that the Republican or conservative agenda is not one that's going to benefit this country in any way, shape, or form. You know, it's not a different time. This is the new century, and a lot of people are concerned about that. But we'll get your answer, Harry, if you don't mind, when we come back for this break.
Sure.
Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NoVam Radio. Past the hour, we're talking with Harry Taylor, who is now a candidate for the 9th Congressional District seat in North Carolina. Harry Taylor is the man who suggested that George W. Bush might at some point want to feel some shame about some of his actions. The idea, Harry, that there is still a middle ground, I question that. I'm reminded of what was his name? Jim Hightower said about middle of the road. He said the only thing you find in the middle of the road is a yellow line and dead armadillos. So I'm just wondering if a campaign based on a middle ground, are there still any Harvey Gantt Democrats left in the 9th Congressional District, for example?
I can't tell you how you couch a Harvey Gantt Democrat. But what I will say is I think that nobody wants to be a victim of terrorism.
Right.
Everybody wants to have a job that pays its own way, and nobody wants to see people working a full-time job living in poverty. Everybody wants access to health care without going bankrupt or have an insurance company tell them whether they can have surgery or not. People want an end to the war. They want young people to be well-educated. Most people are concerned about global warming. They want to breathe clean air and drink clean water and eat safe food. Most people would say they want the government of Washington to be doing the people's business, not the lobbyists' business. And everybody, it's hard to argue against those things.
Yeah, but
we're not getting them.
But
we're not getting any of those things.
Well, that's true, but it's been my experience that so many people who say that they would be in agreement with what you just said, still vote against the candidates who would bring that about. They vote against their own interests. The book What's the Matter with Kansas was a clear example of that, of the continual voting against one's own best interests. I agree with you. I'm a parent, a grandparent, and I have a 3.5-year-old daughter and married children. So I share in wanting exactly what you laid out, and I think that if you strip away the political brainwashing that so many right wingers have suffered under and now believe, you would probably find that to be the case with right wingers too. But I hope you can reach them. I would love to see this country, Harry, get to the point where we don't listen to the Newt Gingriches or the Rick Santorums, that we start listening to people who are aware, as you seem to be, about those common interests.
Well, I hope so too. I'm in a district that, and you said you didn't know exactly where the district went when you were at NC State many years ago, and that district's probably been changed half a dozen times.
Yeah,
since then.
I'm sure it
has. But it.
It does include part of Charlotte?
It's half of Mecklenburg County, so that's the county Charlotte's in,
right.
Half of the county to the east and about 90% of the county to the west. But it is the Charlotte metro area. And it is more Republican than it is Democrat, and it's been held by the Republican Party since 1954.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen yet, Mike, So if it didn't happen yet, maybe that can change, and I intend to find out whether it can be or not.
Well, I think you certainly have the persona or the charisma or the impact. That again, that photograph. Every time I see that photograph, it reminds me of the Norman Rockwell painting, and there is certainly that. And not to focus on the impact of the photograph and not focus on what you were actually saying, but this is a visual society. It's a media driven society, and that picture carries an awful lot of weight. I can remember when that came out. I was working at the time for Air America, and it was just stunning. I think everybody on our network was talking about it. How do people contribute to help you get this going?
They can contribute at the website, which is www.harrytaylorforcongress.com, and there is a link there that goes to a safe place that that allow a contribution to be made online, or they could. I think there's an address there they could send a check to Harry Taylor for Congress if they wanted to. But we need a lot of support. I tell you, this woman will raise a lot of money. I know she's got a lot of money in her bank account already. So
Sue Myrick, yeah.
So money's going to be really important, like it always is. But they can do it at the website if they'd like to help out.
HarryTaylorForCongress.com, and that's all spelled out. It's not the numeral four, it's the word four. Harry
right.
Taylor for Congress. So many of the political pundits are saying that the country is so sick of Republican politics that this may be the year for a lot of decent people to reclaim some of these public offices. Harry, we wish you the best. I hope we talk again, all right?
Okay, Mike. Great.
Thanks. My pleasure. It's a real honor to talk to you, by the way. Thank you so much for taking time to join us.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, sir.
So long.
Take care. Take care. Harry Taylor for Congress www.thegovernmentalnot.com. Check it out. Check his position. I read some of his position on the issues. A little bit vague right now, but he's trending the right way. Check him out, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Six before the hour. Paul Craig Roberts, you're familiar with who he is, I'm sure. He was in the Reagan administration, Assistant Secretary of State, Treasury. I forget. Anyway, he's become an outspoken critic of U.S. Policy in so many areas, but especially where it concerns the Middle East. He has something up at antiwar.com called Bringing Death and Destruction to Muslims, and the starting point is Bush's recent flyabout in the Middle East, where he was feted, I love that word, by sheikhs and potentates and did all that fun stuff. Bush, according to Paul Craig Roberts, in assessing this, Bush told the Arab countries that, quote, Iran is the world's leading state sponsor of terror, end quote, and that, quote, Iran's actions threaten the security of nations everywhere, end quote. And Roberts writes, every country in the world except America knows by now that the U.S. is the world's leading state sponsor of terror. And that the neoconservative drive for U.S. hegemony over the world threatens the security of nations everywhere. So Roberts suggests we take a look at what Bush means by terrorist and Iran's alleged sponsor of terrorism. Roberts writes, Bush considers Iran to be the leading state sponsor of terror because Iran is believed to fund Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in the Palestinian ghetto. Hezbollah and Hamas are two organizations that exist because of Israeli aggression against Palestine and Lebanon. The two organizations are branded terrorist because they resist Israel's theft of Palestine and Israel's designs on southern Lebanon. Both organizations are resistance organizations. They resist Israel's territorial expansion, and this makes them terrorist. Roberts goes on to say, the U.S. is at war in Iraq because the neoconservatives want to rid Israel of the Muslim governments in Iraq, Iran, and Syria that are not American surrogates and therefore are willing to fund Palestinian and Lebanese resistance to Israel's aggression. Israel, protected by the U.S., has disobeyed U.N. resolutions for four decades and has been methodically squeezing Palestinians out of Palestine. Americans do not think of themselves or of Israel as terrorist states, but the evidence is complete and overwhelming. Thanks to the power of the Israel lobby, Americans only know the Israeli side of the story, which is that evil anti-Semite Palestinians will not let blameless Israelis live in peace and persist in their unjustified terror attacks on an innocent Israeli state. The facts differ remarkably from Israel lobby propaganda. Israel illegally occupies Palestine. Israel sends bulldozers into Palestinian villages and knocks down Palestinian houses, occasionally killing an American protester in the process. Israel uproots Palestinian olive groves. It cuts Palestinian villages off from water, hospitals, farmlands, employment, and schools. Israel builds special roads through Palestine on which only Israelis can travel. Israel establishes checkpoints everywhere to hinder Palestinian movement to hospitals, schools, and from one enclave or ghetto to another. Many Palestinians die from the inability to get through checkpoints to medical care. Israel builds illegal settlements on Palestinian lands. Israeli settlers, quote, quote, take it upon themselves to evict Palestinians from the villages and towns in order to convert them into Israeli settlements. A huge wall has been built to wall off the stolen Palestinian lands from the remaining isolated ghettos. Israeli soldiers shoot down Palestinian children in the streets. So do Israeli settlers. All of this has been documented, Paul Craig Roberts goes on, so many times by so many organizations that it is pathetic that Americans are so ignorant. For example, Israeli peace groups such as Gush Shalom or Jeff Halper's Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions provide abundant documentation of Israel's theft of Palestine and persecution of Palestinians. Every time the UN passes a resolution condemning Israel for its crime, the U.S. vetoes it. Historians, including Israel's finest, such as Ilan Papp, have documented the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, the title of Papp's book, published in 2006. Israelis such as Uri Avneri, a former member of Israel's Knesset, are stronger critics of Israel's policies toward Palestine than can be found in America. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz is more outspoken in its criticism of Israeli policies than any newspaper would dare to be in North America or Europe. But it is all to no avail in brainwashed America, where Israelis wear white hats and Arabs wear black hats. Americans don't know what terror is, Roberts writes. To know terror, you have to be a Palestinian, an Iraqi, or an Afghan. Layla Anwar, an Iraqi internet blogger, describes what terror is like. Terror is families attending a wedding being blown to pieces by an American missile or bomb, and the survivors being blown to pieces at the funeral of the newlyweds. Terror is troops breaking down your door in the middle of the night, putting guns to your heads, and carrying off brothers, sons, and husbands with bags over their heads, and returning to rape the unprotected women. Terror is being waterboarded in one of America's torture dungeons. Terror is when you run from hospital ward to hospital ward, from prison to prison, from militia to militia, looking for your loved one, only to recognize them from their teeth fillings in some morgue. For people targeted by American hegemony, terror is realizing that Americans have no moral conscience. Terror is the lack of medicines from American embargoes that led to the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children. When asked by Leslie Stahl if the American policy was worth the children's deaths, Madeleine Albright, President Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, said, quote, "We think the price is worth it," end quote. In the feeble minds of the White House moron and his immoral supporters, the massive deaths for which America is responsible, including those inflicted by Israel, have nothing to do with Muslim enmity toward America. Instead, Muslims hate us for our, quote, freedom and democracy, end quote, the real threat to which comes from Bush's police state measures and stolen elections. Unfortunately for the world, there's little chance for change in America or Israel. The presidential candidates who would bring change in Washington, Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, without which there would be no change in Israel, are not in the running for their party's nomination. As John Mearsheimer noted on January 12th, the candidates in the running are as much under the thumb of the Israel lobby as Bush. The candidates are Bush clones as strongly committed as Bush to hegemony, war, Israel, and executive power. There's more. I redacted parts of it for time, but you can find it at antiwar.com. Paul Craig Roberts writing, Bringing Death and Destruction to Muslims. See, we're not supposed to talk about that sort of thing in this country, and that's the truth. And it is so clear that it's a topic that's off the table for American politicians. Just like impeachment is off the table. Any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic by definition. That's how it's come to be in this country. even American Jews who criticize Israeli policy are considered to be either anti-Semitic, figure that one out, or self-hating Jews. When Air America lost the affiliate station here in Atlanta, when it was sold and taken over by a new owner, an individual, he immediately got rid of Jerry Springer, whom he called an embarrassment to the Jewish race, his term. Got rid of Randy Rhodes because she was a self-hating Jew. Got rid of, Janine's partner, Sam Cedar, I've drawn a blank. Got rid of Sam Cedar because he was a self-hating Jew. And got rid of Mike Malloy because he was an anti-Israel, anti-Semite. Now, the new owner kept Al Franken, who also is Jewish. But Al Franken, you see, was right where it concerned the Israeli issue. So it's interesting how Jewish people in America are identified and labeled as either self-hating Jews because they question or challenge Israeli policy, and atheists in America, like moi, are labeled as anti-Semites because we challenge or question Israeli policy where it concerns the Palestinians. It's a shame. It's worse than a shame. That sounds so trite to say that. It's a shame. But that's one of the issues that Harry Taylor brought up, whether or not George Bush felt any shame for his actions. I wonder sometimes about the various Israeli governments who have been in power, if they feel any shame.
You are now entering a flying monkey-free zone.
Welcome back. About 10 before the hour. The last thing I want to bring up tonight, I think, other than the fact that Canada has now put the United States on a torture watch list, how about that? We'll be taking phone calls when we come back. The number here is 800-989-1480. The House yesterday passed this $700 billion defense bill. Think about that. $700 billion. This is not Iraq or Afghanistan war. That money is always done in an emergency supplemental. $700 billion. $0.7 trillion. And we don't have enough army to send, say, 250,000 troops to Iraq. Not that I would recommend that, but where's the money going? Anyway, the House passed this $700 billion defense bill, and they did it because Bush rejected an earlier version that he said would expose the Iraqi government to lawsuits. Huh? So the House, under the firm leadership of Nancy Pelosi, did what it's supposed to do. It peed all over itself because Bush said, no, this won't work. Then it shook itself, went and took a shower, came back and passed a bill that he wanted. The new bill passed 369-46. It will let Bush grant Iraq immunity. See, Bush will grant Iraq immunity. And the provision, which otherwise would have guaranteed that U.S. victims of state-sponsored abuse could sue in court, now that's gone. Iraqi officials objected to the measure because they said it would have subjected Baghdad to high-dollar payouts and damages. So they prevailed upon Bush, who told Nancy Pelosi, you take this bill back, change it, wipe the pee off yourself, change it, and then give me the one I want. And she did. White House spokesman Tony Fratto says Bush now supports the bill. He added, just had to add a little insult to the embarrassment. He says, we appreciate that the House moved quickly to address the serious concerns the president had. And then I like this line in the Associated Press report. The decision to change the bill without attempting to challenge Bush's rejection reflects the difficulty Democrats have had in challenging the president on even minor issues. Wow. Now, this particular bill does include, out of the $700 billion, it does include $189 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan. But wait, didn't Bush just get $50 billion? And didn't he just get $70 billion before that? And it's amazing, isn't it? It's just, Senator Frank Lautenberg, a Democrat in New Jersey, had sponsored the lawsuits provision in the bill that Bush rejected. And Lautenberg said that was necessary to provide justice to American victims of terror. American victims of terror? You mean we're a terrorist state? Wait a second, Senator. That's what Paul Craig Roberts just wrote at antiwar.com. My. In a statement, Bush said Lautenberg's legislation that allowed victims of American terror or have I got that ass backwards? Hold on a second. I'm sorry, my bad. Lautenberg had sponsored the lawsuit's provision, which he said was necessary to provide justice to American victims of terror. In Iraq? And then the next line said Republicans had embraced the legislation. And the bill passed by overwhelming margins in both chambers. But a few weeks later, after Iraqi officials objected, Bush announced his opposition. So the Democrats went back and changed it and took out the provision that would have allowed victims of terror, including, I guess you can't limit it to one nationality, American victims of terror. Maybe that was Lautenberg's way of leaving the door open a crack so victims of terror, period, could sue. Anyway, in a statement regarding his refusal to accept this, Bush said that Lautenberg's legislation, quote, would imperil billions of dollars of Iraqi assets at a crucial juncture in that nation's reconstruction efforts, end quote. Oh, my God. Billions of dollars of Iraqi assets. Let me think for a second. Let's see. What do they have over there?
Did?
We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. It's almost 7 past the hour. Once again, we're having a little bit of transmission problem here between the studio in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains and our flagship station in Phoenix. So, just by way of letting you know, gentle listener, if all of a sudden the live program stops and you hear a rebroadcast of the first hour or two, it's not because I was critical of Israel. Okay? This is just something we deal with. Let's go to the phones. Starting with Jack, who's listening in Ahwatukee, Arizona on KPHX. Did I pronounce that right?
That's correct, Mike.
Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to speak with you. Earlier tonight, you were talking about how you wanted to talk about crime.
Mm-hmm.
And you also talked about the economy. You know, you mentioned Alan Greenspan's name, and I don't know if you've ever really thought about this, but the American economy and the housing industry is actually a crime scene created by Alan Greenspan.
Boy, it is now, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, Alan Greenspan was warned back in 2003 that the loose mortgage standards that they had in place were going to be the undoing of the housing market, that it was going to create a massive wave of foreclosures.
And wasn't that one of the board members of the Federal Reserve who warned him?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And he was warned 5 years ago, and he chose to do nothing about it over the next 3 years of his term. And the thing is, what I'm going to tell you tonight, I hope you'll give me a chance, nobody else can tell you. I've studied this problem for 39 months when I first realized what the problem was and how big it was going to be. Right now, there's 217 mortgage companies that have gone bankrupt in the past 13 months. We also have the National Association of Home Builders Index. That basically shows their sentiment as to what the future prospects are for housing, what the immediate prospects are, and how many people are actually coming through their models. 2 years ago, it stood at about 65 to 70. Anything above 50 is considered good. Right now, it's at 19, an all-time low. The number of people walking into model homes in the West is at 13. Back in 1948, we had 80% equity in our homes. Today, it stands barely above 50%, and the drop is precipitous. Then this is the big one. This is the one I was hoping I could tell you about. Robert Shiller, the Yale economist, he came out with a study, and he said that in December of 2006, there were 3.6 million homes that had negative equity. By December of 2007, that number had jumped to 5.7 million. His estimate is that by December of 2008, there will be 10.7 million homes with negative equity. That's out of a total of 51 million homes that have a mortgage and 67 million total. We're talking about a potential, and this is his number, of 10 million foreclosures over the next several years. And this was something that was not done by accident, Mike. I've wanted to call you about this, but I've held off because, you know, this is not your sort of topic, but you mentioned crime, and this is a massive crime scene. It was done on purpose with the intent of destroying what's left of the middle class.
Is there...
I can't hear you, Mike. Mike?
Yeah, you can't hear me?
Oh, I can hear you now.
Okay. Is there any chance that a new Congress will...
It's gone out again, Mike.
Can you hear me? Come to doubt their political belief, and I've met a few liberals who come to doubt it. I've met conservatives come to doubt it, but I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who's done a complete 180. I mean, just common folk like you and me. There are some prominent people who have made that conversion, but just ordinary folk like you and me. I very seldom come across somebody who says, yeah, I used to be this, and I'm completely changed. I'm complete, and you say it happened in 4 years. Well, I don't know what to say. I guess when things start to hit you hard. It gets our attention, and
if more people out there had to live, more Republican conservatives had to live in the real world, had to make a choice between going to the doctor or paying the light bill.
I hear that, yeah.
Then maybe they would wise up, you know, smarten up. I don't know.
Well, I appreciate. You calling in, Steve. I hope you call again, and just thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Take care, okay?
Hey, Malloy, keep it up.
I'll do it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your call. I really do appreciate his obviously. I want to pat him on the back and say, well, good for you, for coming out of the ether. But I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to really talk to somebody. I don't want to come across as some condescending, arrogant talk show bastard who says, well, good for you. It's about time you came out of it. You know, I can't do that. I'm always kind of humbled when I hear somebody say, I used to believe that, and now I believe this. Now, especially if it swings around to a Democrat or a progressive or a liberal point of view or a combination of all three or... away from self-defeating conservatism, and I believe that most conservatism these days, as it has developed since probably Reagan, is and that's what 27 years. It is self-defeating. It is maybe Nixon. It is self-defeating. I've said this a million times. I grew up in a family that had liberals and conservatives, had Democrats and Republicans. And by God, we all managed to get along fine. And not because we were a family. That probably made it more difficult to get along. But politically, because the variance used to be not that... I'm talking about working class Republicans, working class Democrats. The variance were not that big. We all pretty much wanted the same thing. Have a decent life, be able to afford this, be able to send the kids to school, be able to get what we used to call medical coverage, and have a job, a steady job. That was the thing, a steady job. And then when the elections came around, yeah, we could sit around and, get half ripped on beer and cuss each other's candidate. But the truth was, the interests of working class Democrats and working class Republicans were so close that it was difficult to see daylight sometimes between the two points of view. But Reagan changed all that, didn't he? Huh? Reagan changed all that. The former FBI spy against his own union members, the former so-called Democrat, he had a 182, didn't he? Only he went the other direction. But yeah, I remember back in the day. I remember when the political contests were more about which side is going to lead the country in the right direction better. We knew that both sides somehow would try. The political philosophies were different. And I'm talking about the surfacey stuff. We never knew what was going on behind the scenes. We didn't know about Guatemala. We didn't know about overthrowing the Shah of Iran, or the president of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh. We didn't know about assassinations. We didn't know about destabilizing currencies. We didn't know about what happened in Greece when the communists tried to take over. We didn't know any of that. It was all surfacey. But at least we could sit down together, Democrats and Republicans, and have a cup of coffee or drink a beer or say, my man's going to kick your man's ass, and everybody laugh about it. Boy, are those days gone, huh? Boy, are those days gone. So, no, I just never quite know what to say to someone like Steve who's changed his thinking, and all of a sudden it seems to parallel my thinking. Not that he came around to my way of thinking, that he changed to Democrat or liberal or whatever he's changed to. I never know what to say. I want to clap him on the back and say congratulations, but that's just a little bit too arrogant. Two past the hour. A couple emails here real quick. This is from Rob, Political 180. Yes, in the subject line. Rob writes, Mike, I started life as a Reagan Republican, and then about 90 exclamation points. And then, like your caller just now, something happened. I came to terms with being gay, and then AIDS hit, and then my lover died of it, and then I came down with AIDS myself and had no health insurance and almost died and starved and had no roof over my head. It goes on. I won't bore you. But my political and personal philosophy underwent a dramatic transformation, and I consider myself now a progressive Democrat. Yes, it does happen to, quote, folks like us, end quote. Rob. Yeah. This is from Prairie 2, Life Imitating Art. Hey, Mike, did you see the X-Files where they foil the smoking guy's plot to remote fly an airliner into the World Trade Center? This is a couple of years before 9/11. Life Imitating Art? Maybe death entertaining. Oh, well. This is from Barry. Hey, Mike, how about those aerials? Remember when the Bushes were showing the same aerial satellite photos to represent a nuclear bomb facility in whatever country was the latest target? Yeah, I remember that. They should have put sound to those pictures. I'm coming to you. Your city will explode. Yeah, probably so. Todd in Illinois writes, regarding the Navy tape, Mike, I have a theory on where they got that tape recording with the Iranian speedboats. I listened to it a few times, and it sounds to me like one of those outer space arcade games from the early 80s. I grew up playing those old games a lot, and I remember what they sound like. I know the game Gorf talked to you during gameplay. Do you remember any of those games? No. Todd in Mundelein, P.S., Space Invaders, anyone? No, I don't know what I was doing in the 80s. I have no memory. This is from Tom in Phoenix. Mike, after hearing you play that recording a number of times, I finally realized what it reminds me of. A movie I haven't seen since the 60s on Chiller Theater on Saturday night in Pittsburgh. The title was Attack of the Crab Monsters. A hilarious grade B movie about giant mutated land crabs with human eyes that are not only nearly impossible to kill, the creatures absorb their victim's intellect by consuming the brain and can project voices of their eaten victims to trap still other victims. I'm coming to you! it sure sounds like Attack of the Crab Monsters to me. Hey, if the Iranians are doing it, where else could it be coming from? Oh, Jesus, thanks for the nightmares guaranteed tonight, right, Tom? And this is from Hey Key M. Dear Mike, why do you always follow the puppet they dangle in front of you instead of the one who's pulling the strings here? Cheney, with his lifelong pursuit of expanding presidential powers, is the real menace to America. Really? Damn! No! But... Cheney? Huh. Thank God somebody finally explained that to me. Whew. I mean, for almost... We're in the eighth year. I've been thinking that it was all Bush. Holy Toledo. Thanks, Hekium. Hekium. Hekium? What the hell is this? Will you all put a name on here? H-E-Y-K-Y-M. Hey, Kim. Hey, Kim. Oh, I get it. It's from Hey, Kim. I thought it was Chinese. All right, back to your phone calls. Bruce is calling from California, listening on the Internet. Hey, Bruce.
Mike, good evening.
Hey, good evening.
A couple things. I first wanted to mention that on Brad Blog,
yes.
Dennis Kucinich is calling for a recount in New Hampshire.
I saw that earlier. Somebody sent me a link to it. It seems like the only one with any guts, any ethics is Dennis Kucinich.
He has more integrity than his little toe than the rest of them put together, I think.
I hear that. Yeah, I hear that.
That's one thing I wanted to mention to you. Another thing was on the subject of Benazir Bhutto's comment about Osama being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
BBC posted the same interview, and in that BBC posting, that clip was cut out.
Yeah, I heard about that. We played that, I don't know, before we took a break, and I heard that that had been excised from the BBC
mm-hmm.
tape.
Yeah, it's cut out. So
I wonder why.
I have no idea. Maybe it's just a little bit too hot for them to handle.
Maybe that's it.
I don't know. I want to do a shout-out to Kirsten in Canada.
Kirsten?
Yeah, she's a new listener, a new truth seeker out in Ontario, Canada. So,
well, bless her heart.
Yeah, and you know, I just hope that
you want to dedicate a record to her, or
anything? Yeah, right. I don't know. You got such great music. I think anything will work great. Thanks, Mike. I want to let you go and get on to other calls, but that's what I wanted to let you.
All right, thanks, Bruce. And what's your name? Kirsten? Is that her name? Kirsten? Kirsten? Hello?
Yeah.
Is it Kirsten?
Kirsten, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you already hung up.
Well, I did, but
yeah,
I came back.
Sorry.
All right. See you later. Hey, Kirsten. This is for you, sweetheart.
And now the wheels of heaven stop. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
So glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Due to technical difficulties, we've gone to a best of. We apologize. Mike will be back on Monday.
Five before the hour. All right, we have a little disagreement going here. Prairie 2 said, Mike, did you see the X-Files where they foil the smoking guy's plot to remote fly an airliner into the World Trade Center? That's from Prairie 2. Bob writes in, nah, wasn't an X-Files episode. It was the first episode of The Lone Gunman, an X-Files spinoff. So there, Prairie 2. Yeah, both these guys are right 100% of the time. So I don't know. I guess the score goes into Bob's column now. All right, Prairie 2, you got to come up with something to something good to get the score back. You know, this is from John, who writes in. Subject line says 180. John writes, I graduated from Texas A&M, voted for Bush in 2000. The 9/11 inside job locked me on, and that handful, Alex Jones. I had a picture of Laura and W on my wall sent to me for donating $25. I'm in management. I went from ultra-conservative to liberal to anti-Illuminati within 2 years. But my parents still watch Fox. I wrote Bush once telling him I wanted a refund. John. Yeah, but did you get it? Probably asked for more money. Back to your phone calls. George is calling from Denver, listening via the internet. Hey, George.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Fourth time caller.
Okay.
Hey, you've been extra funny the last few days.
Must
be the vacation.
Or the drugs, one of the two. You know.
Hey, I agree with George Bush. We need to find these murderers that orchestrated 9/11.
Yeah.
And we need to bring them to justice.
I think so.
Of
course, that would wipe out 80% of his administration, but...
You know, we could... what I was going to say is there's some videos that I wanted you to look at.
Uh-huh.
One's about the paper they used in the 2000 elections. Dan Rather did this interview,
mm-hmm.
and he went to the people that made the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And he interviews them, and they said, for 30 years, we made this paper. We took pride in our job. It was a special paper.
Right.
When those punches come through, it cuts it so clean and perfect every time for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
He said, all of a sudden, we started getting all these rolls. It was like rubber paper, and we rejected them.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we had that authority. We'd reject them. And a couple of days later, there they'd be again. And he said, we wrote right on the side of the roll, bad paper. A few days later, there it was again, like a boomerang.
Mm-hmm.
No, they were going to put the bad paper in those elections. And that video is called The Trouble with Touchscreens.
The Trouble? Where do you find this?
At Google Video.
A Google Video? The Trouble with Touchscreens.
And it's very good. And if you want to skip right to the paper part, that's about about 38 minutes.
Okay.
But the first half is real good. It shows you how they make those touchscreens in these foreign countries. What junk it is.
Foreign countries.
And another funny video is how to steal an election. And that's about 2 minutes long, and it's real funny.
All right. These are both a Google video?
Yeah.
All right.
And Votergate. That's with Bev Harris, and she shows you what a joke these machines are.
Yeah. All right.
Do you remember me? You talked to me about airplanes and how safe it is to fly?
Which one of us had the fear?
Well, we both did, but then you cured yours first.
Right.
But then you told me, you said the planes, they want to fly themselves.
Yeah, they do.
Until they lose one bolt and then they go down. You're riding a meteorite.
Well, it's the takeoff and landing that's a bit risky. But what the hell? I mean, come on, George. You only live once or... six times, you know, who knows, but, you know, just mount the sucker and off into the wild blue yonder, right?
One bolt.
What?
Okay, well, thanks, Mike.
All right, take care.
Okay, too, bye.
Take care. Oh, Jesus. I've got to fly soon. No, I like the part about where they make these airplanes, and on the exterior skin, the exterior whatever the hell it is it metal? I don't even know. But they file or sand down those rivets. Until they're just the rivets that holds the I don't know the right words, that holds the skin to the fuselage or holds the, but they file them down to where there's no wind resistance, so they're filed down, you know, smooth with the exterior of the plane, you know. So which raises the question, what stops them from going boing 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 down the side of the plane? I don't want to think about stuff like that. David is calling from Spokane, Washington, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, David.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Yeah, this morning at work, one guy mentioned that these Navy ships are probably off the coast of Kennebunkport, Maine, and the people in the speedboats were the Bush twins.
You think?
I'm coming to get you.
Coming to get you.
Yeah.
I'm coming to you, or coming for you, or something. I don't know. It's just such a joke.
Yeah.
Bush twins in the speedboats. All right.
Yeah.
Do you believe it?
I don't know. Anything's possible these days.
Yeah, that's
just
that's
like
true.
The cigarette smoking man.
Yeah. All right. Well, David, okay. Listen, thanks for checking in.
You too.
All right. You have a nice evening. Well, I didn't check in. You know, I work here. But thanks. You know, I appreciate it. Call again, David. Honest to God. Dave is calling from St. Louis, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Hey, Dave.
Bye. What's up, bro?
Oh, no. Are you
hey, listen. Go ahead.
Are you the guy that said, I'm coming to you?
Hey, Mike, listen, I used to be, I was in the Coast Guard. I ran on a search and rescue team, weapons team, and when I got out, I bummed around the world, ended up in Hollywood doing sound for junkets mostly, press junkets, doing sound and video. And
right.
So I had my ears in the can for a long time.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard the Iranian clip until you played it, only the clip that supposedly came from the bridge. The video attached to
right.
the Navy clip was on the bridge.
Right.
Well, when you played that back, Mike, I'd love to do a voice analysis of this because I guarantee you the voice that came across as the Navy radio man is the same guy who's going, I'm coming to you. You can hear it over the one MC. It's the same dude.
Really?
The radio man is not on the bridge, right? They're going to pipe that through the one MC.
Right.
It's the same guy. He's clowning around. I guarantee you somebody would find this guy. Because if you play him back-to-back, over and over, the guy was going, I'm coming to you. That's the Navy radio man because you can hear it on the Iranian bridge. Because they're British, right? They're like...
What? Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Dave? Dave? Do we have to take Dave out? I'm sorry, Dave. Listen, yeah. Before you go, you said the S word. I know you listen on XM, but see, we originate in over the air broadcasting, and XM carries us. I have the same problem sometimes with Sirius listeners. We have to use a different language standards on over the air broadcasting, even though you're hearing us on XM. But I got what you had to say, and I hope you call back, Dave. You can't use the caca word on the program. It's cool. You don't. I'm not saying don't. I think it ought to all hang out. I think we ought to be able to say, well, whoops, you know, all of it. But we can't. No, I'm serious. I'll tell you the reason why. We're a new company and a broadcast entity, and with the nutballs now in Congress looking to squash anything that sounds progressive or Democrat or liberal, they just wait for something like that to happen so they could hit us with a $300,000 fine, which would wipe us out. So we're very careful about screening out curse words. But other than that, Dave, that's a wonderful thing, and I hope you call back again. Just remember, no caca, no F word, no CS word, no BS word, none of those words. Just use something else, all right? But that's interesting. Yeah, it would be nice. What are those called? Voice stress tests or voice analysis, whatever they are. Run the Navy guy on the bridge and or wherever the radio man, and that I'm coming to you. You son of a bitch. Now you can say that. Don't ask me why. You know I can say, and I appreciate the fact that the listeners don't pick up on my bad language. Because I really should have, I'm embarrassed. Thank God my kid's asleep this hour of the night. But, if I say son of a bitch or something like that, it's okay. But if one of our listeners do, it just sounds tacky. It's tacky radio, and I should know better. We have a break coming up here, but I see Marge is on hold. So we'll come to Marge when this is over. This break is over, Norman, and who else do we have up here? Scott and Sarah, and what is that? Clocto? Okay, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NovaM Radio.
No voice.
It's about 10 before the hour. Thanks to our motley crew. Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your phone calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Christian Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Couple of quick emails. Eleanor writes, I'm coming to you. She says, that wasn't any of that X-Files stuff. That was my dad yelling down the clothes chute into the basement to scare the hell out of us kids in 1956. And Barry writes, no way, it's the radio guys, the Navy radio guys. It's not them. It was a Beatles album played backwards. Ah, come on. Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, welcome to the program. Hey, Marge.
Hi, y'all, darling.
I'm doing fine. You're talking Southern again.
Well, that's where you're at.
There you go.
You missed it Tuesday night because you were working.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, it was, you know, they broke for the announcement, and there sat your favorite number one media whore, Tim Russert, with his chalkboard.
Yeah.
With a long face announcing that Hillary had won and his 13-point prediction for Obama had gone to hell.
He was really upset about that, huh?
Oh, he had such a long face.
Yeah, they all have long faces. They really do.
Well, what kind
I mean, because of the horrendous miscalculation. You see, they didn't realize that the machinery could be tampered with. No, that's tinfoil hat stuff. Never mind.
Was Royko still alive when you moved to Chicago?
Who?
Mike Royko.
Yes, he was. Yes.
Because he wrote a column, and when I was sitting there listening to Tim Russert, I thought, the good people of New Hampshire must be a Royko fan. Because it was his advice that when these so-called pundits call, or poll takers call, and wanted to know what you're going to do in an election or whatever, lie to them. Flat out lie to him. And when I saw the result, I said, yay, for our side.
Yeah.
And now today I'm hearing that they're saying that the voting machines are not working too good. And I hadn't heard until tonight that Dennis was the one who was calling for a recount.
Yeah, well, nobody else would. Clinton wouldn't. Obama wouldn't. And the reason they won't is because all Democrats have a cowardly streak. And I don't care if it's somebody who comes across like, hi, I'm Mr. Sure for Change, Barack Obama, or hi, I'm Ms. Sure for Change, Hillary Clinton. I don't care who or even Edwards, who it looks like I will probably vote for if I vote this year. That all Democrats at their core, Democratic politicians at their core.
Is Gary voting for our?
Yeah, I saw it. What a slap in the face to his former running mate. But they all have a streak of cowardice. Except apparently some of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus and Dennis Kucinich. That's it. The rest of them, the rest of the Democrats are just terrified that George Bush or Duncan Hines or whatever the hell his name is, the guy from one of these Republicans are going to come up to him and go, "Boo, boo, off to Guantanamo with you." You know, it's weird. So good for Dennis. Good for Dennis.
Oh, gee whiz. Can I put in a song request?
A song request? You want to sing something?
No. Are you kidding me? I haven't had enough boobies to start singing.
Right.
No, but you play it once in a while.
Yeah?
I'm going straight to hell.
Well, we play that on Friday nights.
Oh.
That's our Friday night song.
Oh, well, all right. But I like that. I miss that.
Yeah. Well, how are you going to hear it? Because you don't have a computer.
Well, I could call up at the last minute and just sit there and hold.
That's true. On Friday night, what you need to do is just call in and sit and listen on hold. I just don't understand why you don't get a computer.
Well, every time I get ready to buy one, somebody comes up with some new kind of scam that makes them hard to deal with, and I don't need that problem.
Does your son...
viruses and firewalls and crap.
Well, does your son still live on the West Coast?
Yeah.
Well, the next time he comes to Indiana, just have him bring you one, set it up, and put in your firewall protection and your virus protection so you can listen to the program. Honest to God. Okay, well then don't.
I got to do something because, you know, if they're going to go from analog to digital, everything's going to go, that makes me crazy.
Well, the other thing to do is just sign up for Sirius or XM. It only costs about $12 a month. That's $144
a year. Which one are you on?
Both.
Oh, okay.
And just get one of those services. You have to buy a radio, but your son ought to buy you the radio as a present. And then just, I don't know, get $12 a month or $10.
I was thinking about the satellite, but I wasn't sure which one you were on. And
that's all you need.
It comes in parts, doesn't it? It's not just
you just plug it in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you just get.
I have
you
to
just,
look into that.
You just get it and plug it in. All right, Marge, we're out of time.
You behave yourself now.
I'll do it. Take care. Take
you
care,
too.
Marge.
All
right, bye-bye. That's Marge from Indiana. We are just about out of time. Norman, all right, put Norman on here real quick. Hey, Norman in Miami, we got 20 seconds, pal.
Hey, what's up, before I tell you about my concern about I'm coming for you. First of all, nobody is not stupid enough about really knowing how Bush is. Bush liked to fight.
That's
nobody
right.
is stupid enough to come and attack us or make a threat like that knowing that he's ready to respond.
Well, he doesn't like to fight. He likes you to go fight or me to go fight or some 20-year-old woman to go fight. But Bush isn't going to go fight. He's a coward. He's an absolute... Norman, I got to leave it there. Check in with me tomorrow, and I'll put you on first, all right?
Okay, I will. What time exactly you start?
9 o'clock.
Okay, I will give you a call tomorrow.
All right, man. Thanks,
Have
Norman.
A good night.
All right, you too. Appreciate it. We're out of here. Thanks for hanging out tonight. I do appreciate it, all right? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.